Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, a queer political comedian, self-proclaimed sexy blurred, that's a black nerd, and each week I'm joined in the corner by another fabulous minority where we tackle pop culture, the news, media, and history, all with a little self-care and self-love sprinkled throughout. This week, we are joined by resident life coach and guru, Jennifer Covington of the Shine On Sista podcast. This is her third time on the show, so you know we're going to leave feeling sparkly. I try to pitch Jen a bunch of shows I think she should be watching, and today's episode really feels like a send-up to black lady superheroes of today and yesterday. I saw Harriet the movie about the badass real-life superhero herself, so we talk about what the critics are saying about it, and I give my full review, but seeing the movie really inspired me to dig deeper into who this amazing woman was. You see, we think we know Harriet Tubman, but I guarantee you will be gagged with the fact bombs that I'm going to drop on you on today's episode. And by no exaggeration, she is one of the most inspiring, extraordinary individuals that has ever lived. And a black lady superhero that's kicking ass today. That's Regina King and The Watchmen, which is taking a problematic, dope-ass comic book and mixing my favorite things, superheroes and social justice. What? If you're not watching, you're doing it wrong. And with the holidays just around the corner, good thing Jen's here because she's got some tips to keep us sane during the holidays dealing with our family. These tips are so hot, and they just might save your upcoming holidays with a fam bam, so take notes. Jen and I also managed to nerd out over The Good Place. Such a good show. We'll tell you why. I may have caved and joined the Disney Plus train. Woo, woo, Disney. We're not getting any money from any of the publicity that we're giving them, but... All right, so let's get into it, Corner Kids. It's time to learn, laugh, and play right here at Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority. Yay! Welcome back to the podcast, Jennifer Covington.
Hello.
So I bit the bullet and I have a Disney Plus account.
You and everyone else, apparently. People are excited. So much- People feel like delivered and or have arrived. Like, I feel like life is finally making sense. Also, this is what I'm seeing reported.
I have to give snaps to Disney. For one, they have a shit ton of money already, and they just know marketing because they've been talking about Disney Plus for a long time.
It's true.
A long time. And so it's kind of in the ether. And at the time, everyone was kind of rolling their eyes of like, oh, another platform. But they kind of just kind of kept... Because there's so much programming that's going on it, and it's like almost every TV show or podcast or like late night show you saw, there was someone who was probably on talking about a show that they had that was going to be on Disney Plus. And so you just, it just was so smart. And I, like, it just was very smart about their rollout and their advertising and even stuff that's like not even on there, like all like the Marvel shows that they're shooting, you're just like in anticipation that... You know, the Loki series and the Scarlet Witch series.
Oh, really?
And like the, yeah, there's a Falcon and Winter Soldier series. Like there's all these series that are coming out.
Crazy.
There's a new Star Wars series.
Okay, so you were the first person who I heard got it. And then today yes. I've seen how everyone's like, oh my God, this show's on there. And yeah, like people's life is making sense today. But how did they get you? Like, how was it an irresistible offer? That's what I called it.
Well, I was watching The View, and I think it was like two back-to-back people were talking about shows that they had on it. Like Jeff Goldblum has a show. I don't even plan on watching his show. It's just like I was hearing about
the caliber.
Disney Plus, Disney Plus.
Yeah,
there just was all these things. And what's her face? Who plays in The Good Place, which is an amazing show?
Kristen Bell.
Yeah. Also, plug for The Good Place.
Love
you
it.
Would fucking love it. Oh, you watch it. Oh.
Chad made me. I was like, I don't know. But yeah, it's so good. He got me in with the diversity, though. He was like, there's people other... Because Anyway, because I felt like what they first only showed two people, and I was like, I'm not interested, yes. And they weren't showing the whole cast, but then they did show the whole cast, so I was in, and then it was great from there.
The cast is so, The Good Place is so good. The cast is so, like you said, so diverse. I feel like everyone gets represented, even like minor characters, like people in the background. And the show just takes you on such a journey.
Yeah.
Right?
Don't say anything, but I'll just say that I...
The twists and the turns.
Because you think... You know, because it's witty. There's other things going on. And it's a great cast. So you just think, I'm just enjoying my evening. But I like to predict things. And I'll just say I didn't predict all the things that unfolded. I could say that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep, you can. So if you're not watching The Good Place, you're doing it wrong. Also a show that makes you, I feel good from watching it.
Yeah.
Even though like some heartbreaking sort of things do happen, but it's a great show, I think, that talks about just the complexities of being a human being and trying, what does it mean to be a good person,
totally, because you know, we're gonna segue into this later. You know, I like to watch something that makes me feel good, a little bit of escapism, so Bubbles and Feathers. Yeah. So it gives you a little bit of real, but it's also fun.
But Kirsten Bell has a show on Disney Plus as well. And so I was like, I just went to the website and then I was reminded that all 30 seasons of The Simpsons are insane. On. So I was like, okay, I'm in. Like, I've always wanted to be able to go back and like all 30 seasons.
Go back? 30 episodes of something would be a lot. You're talking about 30 seasons of a show that people don't age, so they could just go on forever, and they did.
And it's wild to me, because like I probably fell off around season 15, and then I maybe watched a few episodes here and there just through my Hulu account. I also got Disney Plus my Hulu for like... I feel like I'm not getting any money from this, from Disney Plus, y'all. Fine.
Keep talking.
I know Disney Plus is gonna be like, wait a minute, here's a little bit of money your way.
Yeah.
But I already have Hulu, and so then I just like, it was like a dollar more, I could just lump them all together, and I was like, okay. Yeah. And see, these bundle packages are a thing of the future as well, and it's gonna be like just having TV all over again. It really is.
Yeah, but it's Netflix, like only what you want to watch. I'm not mad at that.
Yeah, Disney Plus is a channel.
I didn't know that they were going to link up with Hulu. That's what I didn't know. I thought it was going to be its own thing, which it may eventually, but that like...
Disney owns...
That's right.
Disney owns Hulu.
You told me that,
yeah,
and I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's why the Marvel's Runaways show is on Hulu.
Of course.
And will stay there. It'll stay there. But they yanked everything else off of Netflix, like all their other Jessica Jones and Daredevil. Yoink. Because there's a contract with Netflix that they can't use those characters for 2 years if they cancel their contract with Netflix. So I think they wanted to get ahead of the game, cancel those shows.
Yeah.
But then they're throwing all these other things at you in the meantime. They're like, here's Loki, here's Scarlet Witch, here's the Falcon and Winter Soldier. So you're distracted by that. And 2 years goes by and all of a sudden it's like Daredevil's back. You're like, oh my God. Oh,
I've been occupied this whole time and now I'm excited all over again.
Speaking of superheroes, here's something that I don't think that you're watching, but I really think that you would love it.
I just slow blinked.
I saw. With Jen, when I'm pitching a show to you for you to watch that I think you're going to really enjoy, I have to really come correct with my pitch.
You already just said, like, when I'm pitching a show, most people just, like, go out to dinner and just, like, what are you watching? What are you into? This is what I'm into.
No.
It's nice.
I've got to come at you correct and accurate because you, which I really applaud, you're very specific with what you watch.
I'm
and
sensitive.
You ain't got no time to waste.
Like, stop being messing with my spirit. Watching a show.
So... The Watchmen. It's on each. It's it's starring Regina King. So there's that.
I just recently heard that, and so I was like, okay. So here, let me give you background, and then you can do your pitch. So
okay.
Watchmen.
Okay, yeah.
I remember again when we were living in Ecuador. Chad, my husband, would watch it a lot, and I was like, I don't know what this is, and I don't think I like it. And so I was just like, side eye. So now there's this show. So I'm already like. Side eye, but then Regina King did, so I'm like, I'm listening, and so this is where we're meeting.
Yes, so I just here's the thing. So how Disney Plus and HBO Go are connected to me, because what I've done is I've linked up with friends. So I'm doing the Disney Plus Hulu, and they're doing HBO Go. My brother's got the Netflix. There's all these sort of trades. It's bartering. We're bartering digital platform services.
I understand.
Services.
So when I just thought that you might get a kickback and residual affiliate commission, that is now not going to happen. But continue.
Oh, yeah. That's gone. They were, like, literally about to write the check, and then Disney heard that part and, like, okay, no, revoked. In fact...
But you're making it up on the back end because now you've got HBO Go.
Exactly. So now I'm like, sweet, Watchmen, I can get caught up. Because I read the graphic novel, which I think is so amazing and fascinating, because the graphic novel is essentially about, you know, it's these down and trot, these superheroes, but they also were just really human beings and tragic, and some of them abuse their powers, and a lot of fucked up human things happen to them. Looking back, the comic book, I think it was written in the 80s. And also, like, when I was reading the comic book, it just was one of those comic books that feels like it's talking about, like, everything of life. It just is so... the humanity of life.
Yeah.
And, but it is problematic in the way that it does treat its female characters and people of color. And the movie can't, it's hard to put The Watchmen's a huge graphic novel, so the movie just couldn't possibly do it justice. A TV show seems like it makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, this TV show is set in the world of The Watchmen, not necessarily like the movie, but more so like the comics. Like the comic book happened, and the movie wasn't too far off the comic book, it just couldn't do everything in the graphic novel. So Damon Lindelof is the director of it, and I read this interview with him. So, here's the premise. The first 5 minutes starts during the Tulsa massacre.
Oh my God.
So, yes,
this
but here's why this
in.
Is so... But here's why it's so important, because it's talking about the history of things, and so it's setting it, and that's like setting the tone.
Yeah,
of
very,
you know,
Watchmen
of this. Yeah, and because a lot of people don't know, we talked about the Tulsa massacre here, Black Wall Street. We talked about here on the podcast, and so again, it's not a thing that a lot of people know about, and so I just always love it when media and popular culture is
that was important.
Yeah, and so this is literally kind of like a hero's origins that Regina King's has lineage and connection to that.
Okay.
And so it's interesting because it's sort of set in this other world of, like, essentially what the show is essentially addressing is just racism. And sort of,
okay.
I think, and I've only seen the first episode, new heroes are emerging in this world that is so... divided, that like cops don't carry guns, they need permission to be able to use their gun. And the white supremacists have modeled themselves or taken on as their hero Rorschach from the original Watchmen, and they wear masks that are like his, which is an incredible, interesting commentary on his character, because in the comics this vigilante guy deals out justice, and he's a little bit racist. And so it's really great because, like, Damon Lindelof is calling attention to the things that were problematic in The Watchmen, and, like, here we are now, 2019, getting to address those things. In a great work, but also a problematic work. It's just really fucking fascinating. I've only watched the first episode.
Oh.
And it also pays a lot of great homage to the graphic novel itself, that there's things that, like, it's just really much set in that world. I highly recommend it. I've only watched
good.
The first episode. It's Regina King. We got to support our girl.
Yeah, no,
being
we
a black
do.
Ass superhero.
Yeah, it's true. And I know the graphic novel was the thing that was of note, right? And so if it's paying homage to the graphic novel, and like you said, the movie couldn't do the justice that it needed to, and anything that was problematic about it, just from the kickoff of how they've started, they're obviously acknowledging that, and they're probably going to do...
Yes.
And yeah, having Regina there, it's already like, you guys are definitely trying to do it right. You all.
Because you know she ain't signed on for no nothing. And I think... And that's what the writer, Damon Lindelof, like, he's been haunted and stressed out by this project for the past 2 years.
Oh, has
like,
he?
There's a really fascinating interview on Vulture that he did, and he just sounds like... stress the fuck out, paranoid, but he did the best that he possibly could, and not everyone's going to love this project. I think it really speaks to just a lot of the things that are kind of currently happening in a way that's also a little bit distant, because it's, you know, superheroes, and it's also set in a different world, because in this world Vietnam became a state. Like, there's just different it's a different alternate reality, so it's just interesting, because there were superheroes that America had at its disposal, they were able to train change certain events in history that happen. Some good, some not so good.
Right.
So
can I put Chad on it first as a pre-watch?
Yes.
Okay.
Get Chad. He'll pre-watch it for you. I'm excited because it's like this, I think, is HBO's next new sort of epic. It's so beautifully shot. And you've got a black woman front and center, you know, because Game of Thrones kind of didn't have that. So
well, that's why I had to jump the ship. I was like, all right, so you're never going to introduce. Okay. All right. So yeah, I will jump.
Right.
Yeah, yep. I jumped off that boat, so I'll hop into Regina's boat and be like, "Yes, Queen, take me there."
Well, I think speaking of doing it, I think that we should jump into our first corner. So you've got something exciting for us.
I was like, it's kind of deep, but it feels lighter than like the Watchmen, who are like changing the course of history. But
yes,
it's also not that light of a topic because the holidays are upon us, are they not?
Jing, jing, jingle. The pumpkin spice has already been laid out.
Oh my gosh.
The sweaters are out in Harlem. All the holiday decorations are already there. People are already
at Home Depot and they had candy canes. I don't even know what I was doing there, really. Like, I have no business being there. But yet, there I was. And so, yeah, you know, sometimes the holidays are really stressful. I had just gotten a shared ride with, I don't know, this is a departure, but it was the driver, and then he had his fiance with him, and she was pregnant. And of course, me being the talker, we all got to talking. And it was like, yeah, we're engaged and we're pregnant. And it was like, don't ask when we're getting married because we got engaged when we got pregnant. So they didn't say we got engaged because we were pregnant. It's just
right
at the same time. And
but we can just infer.
Right. And so it's like, okay. And they're just talking about it, and the holidays are coming up and they're going to have to defend their position. And I was like, right. So the holidays are supposed to be a time of good cheer, but it tends to bring stress to people. How does it do you? Like, does it bring good cheer or is it stressful for you, James?
For me, James, it depends. I really usually love the holidays.
You do?
I love them. I love them when I can go back home and visit fam, and I'm sadly probably not doing that this year. So I like to do the holidays when I could do it full out. When I can't do it full out, then I'm like Grinch. Like,
oh,
I just took a DNA test. Turns out I'm 100% that Grinch.
No, you can't.
That's me.
And what does going all out even mean for you?
Like, you've got the hat. You're doing presents. You're showing up with the yams and the candy canes and like just spreading
that
cheer.
I love that yams and a hat were like on the first five things that were called out. That's amazing.
And yeah, I'm like putting up the Christmas lights and the decorations. Like, yeah. I'm either all or nothing. And so I just took a DNA test. Turns out I'm 100% that Grinch.
I can't believe you're going to be so empowered with that all season. I feel now you're going to be like, oh, that's cute. That's fine. I guess you can be a Grinch. You're going to be cute about it. Okay. So I'm just wondering.
I will be the cutest Grinch ever.
I feel like I was cool with the holidays, you know, no problem. Some of the holidays I don't even agree with, but I feel like it's
okay,
the basis
do you
wanna
do you want to call out some of these holidays?
Okay.
You don't have to. We're not putting you on blast.
Well, Thanksgiving
is Kwanzaa,
front
is
and
it?
Center. This isn't even where we were going.
Really?
But yeah, Thanksgiving. Okay, so like Halloween I don't have an issue with, even though I'm sure it's not right, but it's like the kind of stuff I would like. It's like witches is a thing and people don't like witches, but I'm like, shoot, I'm down.
Yeah, because there's a history of, you know, in a lot of cultures of like witchcraft that's not necessarily, there's a lot of positive witchcraft that happens. I think it's got a bad name and a bad rap, and too many women were killed.
Exactly.
Because their husbands
had
issues
to say it.
With women.
Right. So it's like, oh my God, I guess. But everyone's so hardcore about it. And when you're like, actually, low key, like the history isn't that great. And then Thanksgiving, people will always be like, Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday. And I'm like, how can that be? So now the thing about Thanksgiving is that it's the basically one of the only non-religious holidays. And so it's the one that everyone can come together despite religion. But, and so it's hard.
History's fucked up.
And I feel guilty because I still haven't taken a stance of like, I'm not partaking. I'm not going to celebrate, because then it's like you're missing out on the gathering of the people.
The family gathering. And that's the thing that I've come to, because Thanksgiving did become one of my favorite ones because it wasn't so commercialized. There wasn't any like gifts or anything.
But it's literally based on.
Right. Yes. It's terrible. But for me, it was a day of like giving gratitude and thanks, but I give gratitude and thanks every day. But it was an opportunity to like, I guess for myself, like I have reclaimed that holiday for my own self and meaning, and like coming together and giving thanks and being grateful that, and also apologizing on that same day for like
totally.
The slaughtering, the genocide of First Nations people.
Yeah. Exactly. I've tried to reclaim it too. It's like, well, I'm just going to use it as a day of giving thanks. And it is a time that people have agreed to gather. But I always just like have a little bit of a chip of like low key, though. This is how, you know, it's like how we all organized around it, though. And it's also like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just the script flipped. It's even just.
I think it could be one of those opportunities that I think with better leadership in the government, like having like it's like reclaiming, redoing Columbus Day as Indigenous Peoples Day, which yes. some states have done. I think
it went Oakland, out really like, well this year, it? I feel.
Yeah. And I feel like that and Thanksgiving should also be like a national day of like an apology, and like there should be a moment of silence.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There should be those things on it.
That's it.
But we've digressed.
We do digress.
But you've got some tips for us.
Either. So there's that part. So that's where my like little angst comes in about holidays. But people have a lot, like sometimes it brings up angst. And, you know, I have like a newsletter community, and folks will write into me and just, you know, want ways to navigate the holidays because we're all trying to be mindful. And the thing about family is that sometimes we can go back and like lock into dynamics. And so you go back to your 8-year-old self.
I become,
right?
Yes. I become 13.
Is that where
from
you go?
0 to 60.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think I can be, oh, I've done so much work. I've grown. I've done therapy. I've, you know, gone to Tony Robbins,
and
I've done self-help
true.
Courses. And then within 2 minutes of already walking through the door,
yeah.
whether it's my mom or my
with
brother.
Your hat or yams.
I'm 13. Oh, yeah, I've got my candy canes and my hats and my yams. And all of a sudden, those go out
Boom.
The door, and I'm 13 all over again.
Boom.
And then it's frustrating because I feel like I'm trapped back in that self, and I'm like, I can see it, and I'm like, oh, I want to get out of this, but it's, I don't know how to, so.
That part. Yes. It's totally that part.
Ah.
Yeah, they say that, like, you know, the Zen monk can go meditate on the mountaintop, but if he can keep his Zen during the holidays, that's how you've, like, mastered. But anyway.
Oh, I love that.
It's like the ultimate test is basically what it's saying.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate test, and
the holidays are the ultimate enlightenment test.
Yes, they are. And so, and even knowing, even having that like that out of body experience where you're like, I want out, because you're observing yourself, but it's like, I'm in it. So anyway, yeah. So just acknowledge if this is you, it's okay. We are all there no matter how much work you've done. Even knowing, just going into the holidays mindfully is really what we're talking about right now. So here are some tips on how to, what I say, survive the holidays, like D-A-Z-E, because you kind of like,
ooh, okay.
Yes. Holidays. Okay. So step number one, because you know I like steps, is create your protective bubble of positive energy. So picture yourself, I was going to say outside the door with your yams and candy canes and hat, but even before you leave your domain,
right?
Do it up. Like, is it EFT? Is it crystals? Is it incense? Is it prayer and meditation? Like, it's nothing is too silly.
Visualization,
right. Picture the day going smoothly, wonderfully. Even if you're not what folks would call woo, just do this, especially if you have anxiety about going into holidays. You don't know if people are going to be talking about you because you're engaged and pregnant and not married and what all that stuff, right?
Or like for those, or like I know there's gonna be a lot of anxiety when your sexuality is not necessarily the norm too. If like someone's going to be saying something about like we all
they saw what you posted
so
on Facebook
like,
about your new partner, but you haven't seen them yet.
Yeah,
yes,
totally. And because like, I definitely have had anxieties of like going back home and like. Sometimes, like, you know, it just, you just don't know what different people are thinking or saying. And it kind of sucks that, like, I think so many of us humans coming at this from so many different angles have these anxieties and these experiences by going to go visit our family.
Right.
That's sad.
Right?
That's really unfortunate.
And we're supposed to be coming together.
Calm down.
Calm down. But this is how, if everyone manages themselves in these ways that we're talking about now, then we can have a harmonious holiday.
Ooh, something to add in your wonderful tools that you just, I use this sometimes when I have anxieties about going to a thing that I'm going to, like it's a meeting or a class that I'm teaching or something I don't want to go do. I say, bring the joy before I go into that room. And it really helps because it changes what I'm doing before I go into the room. It's a quick little mantra, bring the joy, boom.
I totally, and I don't know if I talk about this later, I totally think you should have a mantra locked in to bring you back to what, when you've created your positive energy bubble, is to bring. So bring the joy is great to have a mantra of like reminding yourself of what you're committing to doing and being as you go throughout this night. So I just, this, the point of this step, is like, nothing is too extreme. You got to like get your armor of positivity and mindfulness. And I've definitely gone in unarmed thinking like, nah, and it's just, it's not good. And we're responsible for our reactions. We're responsible how we show up. So take care of yourself. That's the first step, okay?
Got it.
All those tools. Get whatever tools work for you. Use them. Double down. Triple up. And go there. Don't skip step one. Okay, and so then the second thing you want to do while you're there, yams, like, hey, I'm here, is to monitor your energy the whole time, right? And so I say, think of like Mario Brothers or Luigi and Mario, how, you know, like your life, you'll lose life as you get dinged and dinged and dinged. Pay attention to those dings, because you think you're maintaining because you're zen and you've gone to therapy and you're like, ooh, that hurt, but I am delivered. But what's really happening is that your patience and your mindfulness and your literal life source is being drained faster than it does, because throughout life, your life, you have, you know, you're surrounding yourself with people who get you, who love you, you've chosen them, you know, family has been assigned to you. So you're not going to be used to losing it, whatever it is, whether it's your patience, life force, whatever, as quickly. So pay attention to those dings, okay? And just know if you are running out of life, you got to go back to step one. You got to go into the bathroom and go like spray the rose water and hum your whatever you got to do, because if you don't pay attention, you're going to all of a sudden have that out of body experience where you're seeing yourself going off on your grandma and you're going to be like, oh my God, stop. Oh no. She changed your diapers, but it's too late.
You know, going off that Mario metaphor, it made me think of like, so I also think like too, for myself, what I would do if your family does also drink, that drinking will kind of numb you to all of those feelings that you might be feeling. It reminds me of like, you know, like when you get a star in Mario Brothers and you're like all glittery and you can do anything. That's you drunk. But that wears off. And that wears off. And then you're like, oh shit, I only got one life left. I'm a little Mario. And then you get dinged.
It's true. Well, okay. So there's like so many ways to go with that, because alcohol, you got to know what you can drink and what it brings out of you, right? If tequila makes you feisty, don't do that. But if you're going to have some eggnog and get your little star going, do that. Right. Totally.
Yeah. But also I would say too, probably like drink a little bit less than you normally would.
Yeah, you need to have those. Especially, you got to be sharp. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially if you're having anxiety about it, it might just numb you and rev things up a little bit. So I would recommend for myself, that's what I would do.
Me
is
too.
Maybe just have like one less, like every, like make sure that you're drinking water in between, staying hydrated. Just do a little bit less than you normally would if you were, you know, out and about, or that you usually do in the holidays with your family.
It's true, because with heightened emotion, it can, when it lowers inhibitions, what could be great if things go a certain way, but if it veers off, it could be not great that you have those lowered in it. That gold star is just like got you just knocking people out and you're not feeling anything until the next day where you're like, ooh, did I do all that damage? Yes.
That wears off. The star wears off.
Yes. And, you know, you can't hope that someone is always on their best behavior. I talk about everyone has an evil Aunt Gertrude. And so, you know, or just like normal social graces aren't observed with family. So people will be like, oh, you've gotten so fat. And like, that's how they say hi to you. So.
Right.
You don't have to make everything be all good, because you don't have to necessarily endorse bad behavior, but you can spin things and make it positive, which is my third step to just even if it's in your mind. So even if you're just like, I bring the joy, you know, because A, people are sometimes are used to like complaining and going after people and getting that kind of energy and attention from them. But if you don't give that to them, then that kind of takes their juice. So how can you spin anything that's going on positively, even if it's in your head, you know? So let's say you have a family member that's always like gunning for you or just whatever. You can just be thankful that they're alive, that they're still feisty, that you even get to have this time. It doesn't mean you have to stay there. It doesn't mean you have to take it, but to fire back at them wouldn't necessarily create a better scenario. So like, how can you just spin it in your head to be like, this is positive? Of course, that's going to make people even more mad that you're like walking around with a smile on your face unaffected, but that's not for you to manage. But just try, because again, when you revert back to being 13-year-olds, it's like, this is unfair. No one ever loves me. You know, I'm the least favorite. And it's like a spiral. So instead it's like, huh, isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. Some people haven't evolved, but I'm so happy that I took therapy this last year. You know, just try to spin it so that you don't spiral, because that also, you know, the spiral in our heads can be kind of crazy.
Oh my God, once they start, yikes. I also, the two things just made me think of, like, one, it sounds like you remind me of like what Eckhart Tolle talks about doing, is sort of like detaching from it when you kind of like you experience and it's happening. You're like, oh, isn't this interesting?
Yes.
This is the thing that's happening. And you kind of just distance yourself from it, because otherwise you're taking it so personally.
Yes.
And it's so it's like not taking it personally, detaching, kind of acknowledging like, oh, this is what's happening. I'm feeling this. This is just a feeling that I'm experiencing, and just sort of naming it and talking it out.
Yeah. And that's when those mantras will save you. And then it's like, just go get another slice of pie and be like, huh, that's funny that you just called me fat. All right, bye. And just keep it moving.
I don't know if this is on your list, but when you talk about spiraling, I know for myself, anytime that I've spiraled, having a lifeline to like reach out to has been helpful.
Yeah.
Is that am I jumping the gun? Okay.
No, you're not. I've got just one more. I love it. Well, and I feel like these are just like tools to carry you throughout. So like these are tips of what to do. And so then have your tools. So if you feel
you've been my lifeline when I've spiraled, and you've helped catch me of like, okay, I'm going through this thought process and I'm spiraling.
Yeah.
And making sure that I'm not, you know, saying like, you know, you've been very helpful of like, well, this doesn't mean that James sucks. Like the things that I'm, because I start spiraling, you can
this
start doing this
sucks.
Sort of shame spiral.
Yeah,
this sucks. Or like, you know, in Big Mouth, they have the shame wizard. And you'd be like, oh, the shame wizard has appeared.
Oh my
I see
God.
You, shame wizard, you're here.
That show seems insane, so, by the way. I haven't seen it, not a minute of it.
You
don't recommend it to me.
You know what?
I know you don't.
Here's the thing. I wouldn't recommend it to you. It's your husband. He was watching it when I was over, I think like two Thanksgivings ago, like 2 years ago or something. I started in the middle of an episode, season two, episode three. And I was like, what the fuck is this? But I know Maya Rudolph is on it. I'm a huge, huge fan.
Yeah.
And so I started from the beginning and it won me over. She's
hilarious
in it.
I feel like he dove in and tried to watch it because people he loves is on it, but I don't think he stuck with it. He's like, but maybe he should start from the beginning.
Oh, it's actually so good. It's actually really helped me deal with my own adult feelings and emotions, because it's interesting because the show takes place in middle school.
Right.
But it's really us, like, I mean, but it's for adults.
Yeah.
And I think like we can all kind of connect to like, oh, those are my emotions. Like because these are middle schoolers learning how to deal with like hormones and emotions and feelings. And it's like,
our junior high selves represent like our most unconscious self at any given time. So like having it in middle school is just like, it's just like a show about our shadow probably like the whole time.
Yes.
Got
that's
it.
Literally it. It's literally just our shadow selves.
on display.
And like up to like the upteenth degree, which is like so insane. But it's also just like really, really funny.
And they're comedians. So they make it palpable.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Well, I recommend for your husband to get back in the game. Because
And then he can tell me about it. Then he can just tell me because I can't because I'm sensitive. Okay. The fourth and final thing, because these are just easy breezy, but totally have a lifeline. So that should be one of your tools. You know, it's so smart to have. And again, don't say like, I probably won't need it. Like, just have it. We can text each other these days. Go to the bathroom and be like, I was tried. I'm spiraling. Because then you get to report your good behavior of like, but I know that my intention was to move through this day peacefully. And so that's my mantra. And that's what I'm going to do. Perfect.
Yes. Also, if you are someone's lifeline, I feel like your goal should be to help towards de-escalation as much as possible.
This is such an important point you're making.
Not the producer on MTV's The Real World. You're like, you are trying to de-escalate as much as possible. Validate, but also de-escalate, and also like try to give, like, you know, a different approach to things, right?
So important.
You're trying to help them not pop off. Because sometimes you could text someone, they could validate you and just be like, ooh, you better go do this. Don't let them talk to you. And then you go out and it's insane.
Good point. Because I could be either one you at request of me. So lifeline, what was it? Validate and de-escalate. Right, because it could also be like, my Aunt Gertrude said I was fat and ugly. Am I wrong? If I tell her, it's like, well, no, you're not wrong. So you have to know that you are the lifeline and the goal is to de-escalate. So don't give a script for how to pop off and have the best comeback ever that you guys come up with in the bathroom. Just de-escalate and be like, go to the other room with your little cousins who are playing video games and just sit and be quiet and drink some eggnog. Such a good point. Yes. So the other thing is just that if you're, most of the time when we have anxiety going into these scenarios, that you are thinking of a specific thing. So like you said, if you're, you know, your family doesn't know your sexual orientation, or maybe you've been posting on Facebook, but you haven't seen them since, you know, you've revealed some things, but there's usually something specific, right? So prep your answers, like know what you want to say, and not know what you want to say as far as like how you're going to divulge everything, but just have something that you can kind of respond and then bounce things back off of. So if someone's like, you know, they want to know why you still ain't got a job or whatever, you know, you can just say one thing like, oh yeah, you know, I recently found something that might work, or I've landed something, no worries, but yeah, how's work for you? But just have something prepared where you can respond so it doesn't seem like you're being standoffish, but then also have a way to engage people so that you're getting the attention off of you and then onto them. But just be prepared, because you probably know what people are going to ask. You know your family. And so just have a couple of those in your back pocket so that you're also not caught off guard. So then you start being scrappy because you're like panicked and in a corner, and then it's all bad from there.
Wow. And I love that, because I am a one of my survival skills is I play really good defense. I'm a very defensive person when I feel attacked. It's my first go-to when I feel attacked, or someone like when I'm feeling attacked.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a great, if I already have that, I like that approach, because if I already have something, I can just use that instead of being like, well, you know, it's been really hard for me.
Yes.
Or why don't you have a job? Yeah. Or, this again? Really?
Totally,
you know,
as opposed to being
like,
oh,
you know, like it helps so you don't have to be so defensive, because then that puts the other person on guard, and then that just can escalate to a fight and attack, and everyone's feeling salty.
Exactly. So I have like some sample scripts in this PDF. Maybe I can put it in the show notes. It's just a PDF that I came up with 1 year, and I share it with my list every year, and every year people respond. So I'm like, I'm just going to keep using it. And then me looking at it this early in November, I didn't think we were in the holidays yet, but we are. And I was like, oops, yep. I already didn't have my positive bubble, and yep, we've already had some holiday slip up. So I'm like, don't use the guide. Don't be fooled by simplicity. Yes. Have your lifelines, have your tools, and happy holidays.
Welcome back to Fireside Chat on KMAX. With me in studio to take your calls is the dopest duo on the West Coast, Oliver Wong and Morgan Rhodes. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm looking for a music podcast that's insightful and thoughtful, but like also helps me discover artists and albums that I've never heard of.
Yeah, man. Sounds like you need to listen to Heat Rocks every week. Myself, and I'm Morgan Rhodes, and my co-host here, Oliver Wong, talk to influential guests about a canonical album that has changed their lives.
Guests like Moby, Open Mike Eagle, talk about albums by Prince, Joni Mitchell, and so much more.
Yo, what's that show called again?
Heat Rocks, deep dives into hot records.
Every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Going back in time, Harriet motherfucking Tubman.
Ooh,
That's what I think her name should be. So I saw Harriet. I went, one of my students, I work with LGBT homeless youth doing theater workshops. Mm-hmm. One of them was talking about Harriet, and I was like, fuck it, yeah, I want to go. Starring Cynthia Erivo.
I saw her.
She's so talented. Do you know, she's almost got her EGOT. Almost has her EGOT. She already has her Tony. She already has her Emmy. She already has her Grammy. I saw her.
I didn't know she had a Grammy.
She got a Grammy for The Color Purple.
Oh, God. That's amazing.
And then she got a Tony for The Color Purple as well. And I think she got an Emmy for The Color Purple as well.
That's how it should go down.
Something or other.
Yeah.
So she was like, bang, bang, bang. And so Cynthia Erivo, I saw her the day before she won the Tony in The Color Purple. The day before she won, tickets went up the next day. I was glad I went when I did.
Oh, nice. That's a win.
So I went to go see Harriet. And I, yes. So I do totally fucking recommend it. What?
I said, can I say something? Since it's...
Yes, you can. Please jump in here.
There's always a subtext of convincing me to see a thing.
I texted Jen. It was like, let's go see Harriet and we'll talk about it. And then Jen said,
okay, well, I was super booked that weekend, but
fair enough.
But I was like, I can't. Okay. Cause I feel deeply. So I saw, okay. So we were, I don't remember what Chad and I were going to see, but there was like all these previews, you know, previews are like 45 minutes now, which is totally fun and fine.
So much.
But once Harriet came on, we did not care about anything. It was like, we were like cheering and so excited. I was already like crying. But so then every time, and I didn't realize that Harriet was that girl. I know her looking different. And so I was like, oh my God, that's her. And then of course, like Janelle Monáe, I was like, I cannot. And the dude
Janelle Monáe.
From what you call it? From Hamilton. He's a Leslie Odom. But anyway, I was just like, I can't. And so then every time, like I'm trying to look up a how-to on YouTube, they're showing me the preview. And it was just like, even like the first chords of music, before I could even register what it was though, I'm like welling up with tears where I'm like, I'm not able. So I just don't get excited about like weeping and like my soul pouring out at the movie theater.
Wait, but Kent, I want to tell you this. Harriet is not your typical slave narrative. Harriet is a superhero story.
Okay.
It is. I'm telling you, it's a superhero story. I feel like this is what Quentin Tarantino was trying to do with Django Unchained. She's a motherfucking superhero.
She's my superhero. And one thing too, like, totally.
Oh my God. Here's the thing. And so
I just want to see it at home where I can like be with myself.
I'll tell you this though. Like, I don't think, and I've seen many a slave narrative, and I get like why, like sometimes black folks, like it's hard for us to go like, I have to be in the right mood to watch 12 Years a Slave. Like, I've been in the right space.
I'm not coming at it from that angle, but that is a whole other topic. Totally.
But like, and it is, and I do get it. I think for this one, it's like, I've never watched a slave narrative and felt fuck yeah. You know, it literally is, and even Cynthia Erivo was talking about it, like she really wanted to go at it. She wanted to play a hero, but a hero who was real. It literally feels like you're watching a Marvel superhero origin story, and this woman was real.
Oh
like,
my God.
Like the stuff they're saying. It's just like, I feel like
I'm going to cry right now. I just can't.
It finally was like a story where it's like, we're winning. It's really rare for like the usual, like there's no, I'm going to spoiler alert this. There's no whipping scene. There's no like the typical just sort of like things that keep you so downtrodden. It's like, yes, there's adversity, but overcomes it every single time. I think it's also interesting because similar to Nate Parker's Birth of a Nation, it kind of shows in the beginning how Christianity was used to make slaves obedient, but Harriet finds her own spirituality and connection to her own higher power to make it work for her, and also using the history of these songs as part of the way to help free
her people.
So it's literally like, Harriet Tubman's a fucking badass superhero. I'm like, this is like what white people probably felt like when they were watching Braveheart. Like, I just felt
I'm done with you.
I've never seen Braveheart, but I know that they get really like, yeah, we can do anything. Like, they get really inspired about their past, you know?
You needed Mel Gibson for that?
But that's how I felt. That's how I felt like watching Harriet. It was like, finally, this is like a slave narrative for Black people to watch, and like you can go like, and not, you're not gonna leave feeling set. You're gonna leave feeling pumped. You're gonna be watching it, being like, yeah, go, like, and also great because you know how it ends. You know it ends well for her. So there's also that going on for
it. Yeah, you're right. I love that. I need that.
And also, here's the other thing too. I want to point out, there was, I had, you know, written a little bit of a review of like, go see this movie, kind of just similar things that we're talking about. And someone posted of like, well, this woman didn't like it, and it's this Black woman who didn't like it, and she has her.
I'll never fall. And there's enough. A Black woman who didn't like it. Okay.
And I'm sure there's a lot of Black people who didn't like. You know, I just hate it when someone's like, well, what
so
about
tell me this
person?
What
saying?
Do they not like about it?
Well, for them, they felt like it was just too. It was Hollywood. You know, putting out another sort of slave narrative. What kind of hurt for me? And then there is a character who, if you're watching Queen, it's the guy who was in Queen Sugar. The guy who's dating the aunt.
What's his name? Jackson?
Yeah.
Memphis, well, something.
He plays a slave catcher. So just Uncle Tom. And the woman was upset because that they had this character. And she was like, it just makes, you know, Black men not look good. And I'm like, there's so many other Black male characters that are in that movie.
One of the adversaries of that time. I mean, like, that is an adversary, you know, like.
That is an adversary. And, like, again, I think there was a lot of, I think the story is also talking about a lot of the things that were the elements that were put into the Underground Railroad, which, again, like, I think we're going to get into it about Harriet in general, but, like, it's like, you think that you know, but we really don't. I'm realizing my history class was shitty. That, like, you think totally. That you knew these things yeah. about it, and you just really didn't. And that, okay, like, she was like, there's not a lot of, there, like, that rarely happened. I don't know if that is true. And even if it's not, for me, what I was connected to, that there are Black folks alive today that turn on their own community members and, you know, do things against their own people, their own humanity to survive. They forget, they get power hungry, that we're talking about. I mean, Black folks who vote for Trump, or like that one, oh, I'm saying prayers for her, but there was that one Black girl who was at that Trump rally. God. Someone find that girl, get her some Entezake Shange and some Ava DuVernay.
This is the thing that you're saying, though. She may not want that. She definitely might not want to see you coming, you know? Like, she's trying to, that's what, you know? Like, that's the whole point. I appreciate what you're saying. Like, yeah. Well, even if that dude wasn't really there, symbolically and metaphorically, absolutely was there, is there, still be here.
Yes. Back. That's exactly, so that's what I'm saying. And then, like, folks are like, oh, well, Cynthia Erivo, she's British, she shouldn't be playing that part.
Oh, get out of here.
I used to, like, as an actor, like, when, what's his name? Yeah, when David Oyelowo, who played Daniel, David Oyelowo.
Oh.
Yes, David Oyelowo and Daniel Kaluuya. So the guy. Yes. So him in not Us, but the other one, the When They See Us. No, that's the different.
You're saying Oz so, versus like The Wire. Those I get those confused.
Oh no! So we had Daniel Oli. I'm getting their names confused. The guy who played in Selma, who played Martin Luther King, he is British. And then
the guy who was in Get Out.
The guy in Get Out, also British. And I get it because it's like, as Black actors here in the U.S., it's like, oh, they're taking our jobs. But at the same time, I think that this, like, I don't think we need to be fighting amongst each other. And Oprah brought up this good point. And when Oprah says something, it shuts it down for me. She was talking to Cynthia Erivo. She was like, you know, when Meryl Streep played Margaret Thatcher, no one batted an eyelash. You know, no one was up in arms about when that happened. Or when Emma Stone was in The Favorite. Or when Cameron Diaz tried to do an accent in Gang of New York for like part of the movie. Like, nobody.
I don't know if those are the same. It's a little apples and oranges. I, of course, like think about like Selena and Jennifer Lopez because she was Puerto Rican and Selena was Mexican, and that was an issue. But I don't know how.
Which
I feel
also
about
funny.
It.
You should mention that. You know, Netflix is doing a Selena series.
I did kind of see.
I saw the trailer today.
And is it going to be good? Is it Because I was like, I can't watch this means too much to me in a different way than Harriet, obviously. But I was like,
she looks on point. She's actually singing herself. Okay. The girl who's cast out of Selena.
Who is it? How do we know this actress? She is from.
I don't know her.
She's from something.
She is the J-Lo to my Mariah Carey. I don't know her. How apropos.
Indeed.
but it looks really good. And at first I was like, do we really need another one? I'm like, you know what? Tell those stories. In the same way. For people who are like, ooh, then we're up in arms about Cynthia Erivo being Harriet, then go make another movie and tell that story again. Because
keep telling it.
We've had so many.
Yeah.
Keep telling. The fact that this is the first Harriet Tubman movie is insane.
It's true.
There's so much to tell. How many, you know, FDR have we seen?
Oh my
How
God.
Many, you know,
yeah.
We've seen all these, you know, Winston Churchill, you know, Elizabeth. We've seen them so many times. Can we get some more? So this brings us to, I watched the movie and I thought, like, you think you know Harriet Tubman, but you have no fucking idea. So I want to throw, I have 10 badass, dope ass motherfucking facts about the woman you thought you knew, but you didn't.
Okay.
Also, keep in mind, I was watching this movie and I was like, what? Like, she was 25 when she was doing all this shit. And I'm like, what am I doing?
Don't.
You know? I know, but I was inspired.
No, I
was
do inspired. That too. So, like, dang.
Let's start with her name. So everyone's like, oh, Harriet Tubman. No, her birth name. Yeah, already got you.
Yeah, you
already
got
you
me.
With the double take.
Wait, what?
Her birth name was Araminta Minty Rose, and she was born in 1820. And in the movie, they call her Minty. That's what people used to call her, was Minty a lot. She was born somewhere between 1820 and 1823. Actual birthday unknown because, duh, she was a slave. So
no one cared at the time. We no care, one. Harriet.
Yep. So, again, this one talking about superhero origin stories. So, after she escaped, she adopted her mother's name after she escaped. So, again, like, Harriet's, like, one of her new sort of mantles, you know? And she also was referred to as Moses. So, again, like, her superhero name. She's getting all these different sort of superhero names. She literally was just, like, larger than life. So, she lived... She ended up living to the ripe old age of 91.
Aww.
And, long life. She was also known as the Canaan for Canada, because she was getting folks, like, all the way up to Canada as well. And where did the Tubman come from? So this is a little bit of a spoiler from the movie and her life, but it's also this part of her life. So
you need to know it today, right now.
You should have known it. And it's like, yeah. So in 1844, she married John Tubman, who he was a free black man. And after Harriet had escaped, she came back for him, but he had married another woman. So what I love is listening to Cynthia Erivo was talking about. She wanted to also show you see these pictures and she's so stoic, but she also was a woman who was wildly in love, you know, and she went all the way back. She was free and went all the way back. And this man was already married, because also it's interesting because this happens a lot that like the movie kind of talks about, like, you can't be mad about people who are just literally trying to do their best to survive. You know, for folks who didn't run away, folks who just kind of kept going in the best way that they could. Like, not everybody had that desire to, like, I got to get out of here, you know? And so there's a line in the movie where it's like, you can't fault those of us who are just trying to survive.
My. That is
so
heavy.
So that's where
for
she
me.
Gets the name Tubman from, though. She took his name, so that's where, you know, Tubman comes in.
Well, that's because she was on that alias tip. She's like, just so you can't catch me, because forget you, missing out.
Don't know my name.
Can't catch.
And then there's John Brown, who referred to her as General Tubman. And John Brown, she helped him with the John Brown ferry raid. She had aided him, which is a whole other can of worms that I'm not going to open up today.
Okay.
We're gonna circle back to John Brown in another episode.
Aww.
So number two, she was a master of disguise.
Yes.
So on her first escape, she pretended to be a field hand walking around with the chickens or like a house servant. She was just changing it up. Like,
yeah.
When she stayed at a home of an abolitionist couple, she pretended to be a house servant. She did one disguise where she used, she pretended to be reading a newspaper because she was known to be illiterate. So she was like, let me read this newspaper because uh-huh. they'll then be like, oh, that's know. Not her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so dope.
So dope.
And she also would dress as a man, a middle-class woman. She just literally master of disguise.
Mm.
So fucking dope.
That was the
so
key.
So number three, she meant business. Ms. Tubman was not fucking around.
Okay.
She was so serious about when she was a conductor on the Underground Railroad, which that happened in 1850 when she returned to Maryland. So she was avoiding, you know, cops, dogs, mobs, bounty hunters, slave catchers. Like, it's insane.
Oh, my God.
She was doing. And she carried a Glock. She knew how to use it. She was packing heat.
You had to.
She knew how to use it. She wasn't fucking around. And you know, also, too, it's crazy. You're watching this movie. You're like, She didn't have Nikes running around. I think when she first escaped, she was like barefoot.
Is that and it's also insane to think about?
And no Google Maps, no iPhones, not even a map. All she knew was the North Star and where the moss was, on which side the moss was. Like, holy shitballs! And when she was helping people, when she was bringing people with her. For all of her different trips that she had, they would sleep in swamps. They moved only at night because it was safer. And then once on the railroad, she had threatened to kill someone who lost their nerve to escape. And
I know that's
she
right.
She was like, "Listen, you go on or die," is what she
because
said to somebody.
Because it's like either you're gonna get us all killed, or I'm just gonna have to do the dutiful because we all trying to get up out of here. It's not easy though.
Yes.
It's not easy call to make.
And she was also known as the Black Ghost, and there was a bounty on her head that was about $12,000, which equals to $330,000 today.
Yes.
You do the math. Also, so we're using a lot of the spirituals to help tell people where to go because they also wanted to make sure it was accessible for everybody.
Yeah.
Because not everybody could read or write.
Right.
Just brilliant. Fact number four. So it's really
we're
cool because you also see
four?
Other. Yeah. Fun fact number four.
I'm dying. I've learned like 20 new things. These are compact.
Okay, so you see a little bit of in the movie of other members of the Underground. You see like just sort of like how the Underground Railroad operated. Uh-huh. And, you know, other people were ferrying different people back and forth. One thing that you saw, like Harriet never lost a slave. Isn't that crazy? Never lost
that
a slave.
Is.
Didn't lose them. She would recommend that the slave escapes on that they would escape on Saturdays because their owners use Sundays as a day of rest. They wouldn't notice the slaves missing until Monday, and it gave them a 2-day head start. So a lot of this
never
too comes
lost
from
a
because
slave?
She.
That's incredible. I thought it was like casualties, inside, but you know,
she had inside knowledge that the other people in the Underground Railroad didn't necessarily have. You know, she been in the system, she had been through it, so she knew. Hey, let's leave on Saturday because it'll give us a 2-day head start.
That's
so
incredible.
Dope.
I also know that she would move in like the winter when the nights were longer.
That literally was my next sentence. Yeah, she moved in the winter because the nights were longer.
I just kind of wanted to get it in since you have these compact questions. I'm like, oh, this one will probably file under number 4AB36.
Slip it in. It is there. It's estimated that she probably helped about as high as 3,000 slaves escape between the knowledge and information that she was also providing.
Mm.
She had about 19 trips. She guided her parents, her siblings, relatives. Yeah, so, and then some were guided, some were guided by her. Some were her giving instructions of where to go for different people. So she herself guided 70 folks to freedom.
All of them, though.
And one of her last trips, there was a baby, a little baby. They had to like drug the baby to keep it quiet, but just still amazing. Never lost anybody and had a baby on her last trip. Like, what?
I'm stunned and amazed.
So this is my favorite fact, and I discovered this one, and I'm actually kind of mad because the movie doesn't, like, it glosses over this, and this is my favorite of the Harriet Tubman facts, because I didn't learn this until I saw. And so if you watch the movie Harriet, go home and then look at Drunk History with Octavia Spencer, because in that it shows you that Harriet Tubman was a motherfucking spy for the Union Army.
Wow.
How did I not learn that in school? She was a motherfucking spy. Like, after all she had already done, the war was happening. She's like, I can do more. And she was a nurse in the army at first. Then she was a cook. And she's like, listen, I'm motherfucking Harriet Tubman. I can be doing more. Do you know what I did?
Yeah,
do you
like,
know who I am?
I'm the best
I'm
one
about?
For this. I can do this.
Yes. So, yeah. So she, yeah, I'll talk about in a minute for fact number six about what she did. But yeah, she received about $200 for her 3 years of combat service, which is only about $5,400 if you adjust for inflation. And she applied for veterans compensation. It took her 34 years to get it.
That is so irritating.
After the invitation of President Lincoln's Secretary of State, William Seward, she was 78 years old when she finally got it. And that's so stupid because for many reasons. But for fact number six, that she was the first woman to lead a combat assault.
Wow.
Harriet Tubman. So when we're celebrating Veterans Day, hats off to Harriet Tubman.
Okay, great.
She was a fucking veteran.
Thank you.
She was in it. So while under the command of Colonel James Montgomery, she led 150 Black Union troops across the Combahee River in South Carolina in June in 1863. So this is like kind of like barely in the movie at the very end. I'm like, what? We need a sequel. Like,
yeah, because I was
going to
say it was just because it was like the next chapter of her epic life. So they're like, we just got to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unless Elizabeth got two fucking movies
with
like Helen Mirren.
Sure, I'm down
so let's
for that.
Do Harriet too.
The series.
I need to see it because, like, literally, I've been sitting in that movie theater for 2 hours and like however long the movie is, and I know that she's also a spy, and I'm sitting there ready for like the next half hour, and
yes,
the movie just ends, and I'm like, no, like, yeah. So using information from escaped slaves, she led, so on top of that, like, that's like her biggest thing that she did with the 150 slaves that she helped, but she also was using information from escaped slaves, and she led the Union riverboats through Confederate torpedo traps, and they freed about 750 slaves, dropping off Union troops at little areas.
Oh my gosh.
And they would burn the estates of an influential Southern sectionist who supplied Confederate forces.
Uh-huh.
And she didn't lose a single troop.
Dang.
Sequel. Okay? I need a sequel.
You're right. Man,
right?
So then this movie could have been her real birth name, and then the second one could have been called Harriet.
Yeah. I mean,
but we wouldn't have known who they were talking about because we had to get hip from this movie.
We'd be like, oh, what's that movie? Yeah. What is it? Like, yeah, I don't know who. Minty. Again, like, she just, this woman, just so fucking amazing. And, like, I'm mad that I wasn't until, like, I was an adult that I learned, like, I think I was 30 when I learned that she was a spy.
Yeah.
Like, for 30
years, I
didn't
know. Fact, but it was only after my own knowledge, yeah, after learning.
Dumb. Thank you, Drunk History, for putting that in there. It should have been more in the movie, but we're waiting for the sequel. So, number seven, she cured dysentery.
No, wait.
Her knowledge of the local flora in Maryland led her to find a cure for the Union troops who were suffering. So she also would help to relieve. This is like when she was being a nurse.
Yeah,
like
she was a nurse
doing all this stuff. And so she helped to relieve symptoms of chickenpox, cholera, and yellow fever. I mean, this woman, what she needs her own Netflix series. I don't even think two movies could do it justice.
Yeah, this is like the life and times, because it would just be like Harriet Wednesday. She's covered more on a Wednesday than you have in 8 years. Congrats.
Yes. Okay, so this is really interesting. So she's doing all this amazing stuff, but she suffered a brain injury which caused her to have narcolepsy and seizures sometimes.
Really?
So, yeah. So when she was a teenage slave, she was out running errands, and there was a slave who was escaping, and this overseer threw a metal weight to try to stop the slave who was escaping. They had terrible aim. They hit Harriet instead.
Oh, my God.
And in the movie, it plays out in a little bit of a different way. They talk about it in a different way, but this is what happens. And it's a huge part of the movie. And she said that she, in the movie, well, this is what she said, that it actually, like, she would have these seizures or these narcolepsies or these spells, as she would call them, and actually in those things, she said that she would have visions and dreams, and she considered it sort of signs from God, and these things would guide her.
Whoa.
Like, in the movie, they use this as, like, her guiding posts of, like, oh, don't go that way, leave now, go back home.
Ooh-wee.
Like, for her, isn't this wild?
Wow.
Because if you think about it, it's, like, everything that she did and went through, it's, like...
divine
intervention or something.
Yes.
Like, it's a miracle. Like, all the things.
Yeah, it's like destiny on another level.
Yes, like, literally destiny on another level. Like, she made it all the way on her own, all the way to freedom. Like, and then helped free thousands of other people and, like, did all this other stuff. Like, 19
trips. And lived till be 91.
Oh, get this. So when she was much older, she eventually had brain surgery to fix her sleep problems, but... she refused anesthesia.
Come on now.
No. Here's what happened instead. Instead, she opted to chew on a bullet just like the Civil War soldiers did when they had a limb amputated. Harriet Tubman, ladies and gentlemen. Harriet Tubman.
I'm outdone.
This woman. Again, like, you think you know. You're like, oh, I know Harriet Tubman.
Right.
And I'm reading these facts. I'm like... I feel like I read a little paragraph and it was just like, oh, they have her just being this, like, old woman just singing about, you know, weird in the water.
Totally.
And that's it.
Yeah, the fun fact is, like, did you know that they use the music to send a message? And you're like, whoa.
Yeah. Okay,
that's awesome.
Cool.
But no. She's
no,
like,
she's disguising herself. She's got a gun.
Bump that. Didn't lose anyone. That's another thing. You're like, surely there's casualties, but that's.
Nope. Not Harriet, not her brigade, not the operation she was running. So she did have some financial troubles towards the like for a minute. She fell prey to a gold con person, but her family came to her aid. Mm. And so she was owed. She was like, listen, I'm owed so much money for my services.
Yeah.
Because she was only given, like, so much money. And so she said that she was owed and fought for her $966 for her services, which that would have been $30 a month for 32.5 months of service. So she was owed all this sort of money. And she eventually was given it when she was 34 years of age to get a veteran's pension. She had to fight for her veteran's pension. The first woman to lead... a brigade.
Is that right?
She was a spy, like, helped us win the Civil War. So what also wasn't helping her financial woes is she also joined the women's suffragette movement, but it was her donating a lot of her time, helping out Susan B, giving talks in D.C. and Boston and New York. So she's also part of that movement, which I don't think she gets a lot of credit for that either. Fun fact, she married a younger man who was 22 years younger than her when she was 59.
That's so funny that that's a fun fact. And you're
Nelson
like smiling
Davis.
So big, you're like, get it.
I just think, of course, Harriet's gonna marry a younger man because she's just boss ass.
Yeah.
She's like, get over here, do your thing, and I gotta go do some talks. So last fact, number 10, so we know that she died at the age of 91, and she died in the Home for the Aged, which was a charity that she had founded herself.
Okay.
And she was buried with military honors in the Fort Hill Cemetery in Auburn, New York.
Wow.
Harriet Tubman, you thought you knew, and you didn't. You just didn't. Listen, I had seen the movie and still was blown away by this research that I just found.
Yeah.
You know?
I am really blown away by that and have to think on it and feel into it and read about it. And
I think one thing that really stood out to me was, again, the power of storytelling as well. Like, I have been feeling kind of lost, and it was just really inspiring to see her do, like, talk about someone who had problems. Like, again, like, everything's sort of relative, and not to, you know, we all are going through stuff.
Right.
But you can always kind of put it in perspective and just be like, well, Harriet Tubman was in slavery and ran away, and not only ran away,
but,
and then freed
back.
Other, came
back
and kept
thing.
Coming.
Yeah.
And kept coming back and just kept, like, she could have actually just had, like, a nice life in Freeland, and she was like, nope. And then even after she had freed a bunch of people, she then joined the army and was, like, doing more badass
she
stuff.
Is
so
that
it's like,
one. Well,
and so just for me, it's like, being inspired by, you know, the, we all have that thing that we're, we that gift that we're supposed to be giving and doing. And so it's like, she was open to it. She had to maybe get hit in the head to like hear what the voices were saying.
And she kept saying yes.
The direction.
Yeah. You know, like, I think that too is like, you keep saying yes to the call because sometimes we say yes and then retreat. And so that's also, you know, like, she kept on and didn't stop saying yes. And that's amazing. Yeah. And just even on a practical side that I was talking about in another interview I did, especially when we talk about like where to source your confidence, or especially if you're going through a time where you're not feeling confident, especially if you feel like, you know, I'm Black in America and it's hard, which it is, but also knowing like we come from the lineage of folks like Harriet Tubman, you know, like we, that is flowing in our DNA. We come from that. That's our lineage, you know, and only this, you know, strongest survived. And so that is too, like, that does make me like throw my shoulders back more. Not that I have even touched what Harriet has done, but at the same time, you know, it also like takes me out of my own, like, woe is me. It's like, you also have things to do. And it's like, you have to keep building on that, whatever that looks like in this day and age. But it does just like help when sometimes you can be like, oh, woe is me. It's like, look, we got things to do.
Harriet did not. Listen, her heart was fucking broken. The first time she went back was for a guy and he was married to somebody else, and she kept going. Like, she is one of the most inspirational people like ever.
Yeah.
And we need to get her on that fucking $20 bill. Like,
I
after
know.
This, I
was
like,
that's
oh,
what
yeah,
you were going to end with, of like when that was going
to
happen.
No, no, but she needs to, because she's done more heroic stuff than anybody else that's on those, you know, fucking money. So she's a fucking badass. So definitely go check out Harriet. Also, I forgot to mention this. The movie Harriet was directed by a Black woman, and we have to go support that. I think that we can't keep back, like, Ava DuVernay, she cracked the glass ceiling and she's doing all these big things, but like, it's still amazing that a Black woman directed this huge, like, I mean, big blockbuster period piece and about a Black woman. It just, it's really revolutionary. And
it
I think
is.
That's what's kind of disappointed when the other woman was like, oh, Hollywood, yada, yada, yada. I'm like, this is Black people telling their stories. So,
yeah. Two thumbs up. Okay, I'm convinced.
Yeah, check it out.
Hey everybody, this is J. Keith Van Stratton, host of Go Fact Yourself, a live game show here in the Maximum Fun Network. On Go Fact Yourself, we take the smartest people we know and make them look dumb.
Oh, by the way, how much do you know about chicken husbandry?
You gotta give them that grain.
All right.
You gotta give them that grain.
And then smart again.
What future Hall of Fame pitcher for the Cleveland Indians became the first active player to enlist?
Bob Feller.
Oh, okay.
We've got me, co-host Helen Hong, plus celebrity guests and actual surprise experts.
All right, we have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure.
Is it Alan Amy?
Helen, who do we have tonight?
Alan Havey!
Alan Havey!
In the coming weeks, you can hear guests like Maria Bamford, Tom Bergeron, Paul F. Tompkins, Janet Varney, and Grant Imahara. Check us out on the first and third Friday of every month here on the Maximum Fun Network.
Well, that's our show for today. Thank you, Jen. So great having you on the show. Always love having you stop on by the Minority Corner. And I feel so much more prepared for the holidays today. And actually, you are as well a Black lady superhero. So fitting for you to be on the show today. Let me know what you all thought about the show. Are you digging the new music? We also have some new artwork coming at you. A lot of new things coming at you on Minority Corner. We're rolling them out slowly. Too much change. It might freak you out, but Corner Kids, we are going on a new adventure and new era. I appreciate y'all so much. Remember, you can email us here at Minority Corner and you can ask us anything, give us any feedback as well. Y'all have been very good about that. You can email us at minoritycorner@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us. It's just, I'm doing the best I can keeping up with the tweets, and you can tweet at us at Minority Corner. There's also the Minority Corner Facebook group. There's the Corner Kids Playground. If you search for that, you can join on in. The conversation is delightful. It's the only part of Facebook that I really thoroughly enjoy. A lot of great stuff is happening in there. Honestly, the best way to get in touch with me. And remember, on Monday, If you listen to it this week, we have the Minority Corner moment coming at you. A little something-something to help jumpstart your week. So you've got us bookending your week on Fridays with a full episode and Monday with a little bit of a something to help get your week started. So a big thank you to all of you for listening to Minority Corner. I love you all so much. We can't do the show without you. So thank you for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to y'all on Monday. Love ya.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.